Last case is 99-2203 in reinstated William Vaughn, deceased. Justice Rudnick has refused herself in this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Rudnick, Judge Anthony Ballin, who is the judge of the court of appeals in the Gulf District. Welcome, Mr. Ballin.
Thank you.
Mr. Potash.
Good morning, Your Honors. I respect you. 3 minutes for rebuttal purposes. May it please the court, my name is Lester Potash, and along with my co-counsel, Michael Potash, we are here on behalf of Angela Vaughn, who has brought this matter to this court, asking that this court reaffirm a basic and fundamental principle of civil rights involving due process of law, and to affirm a basic and fundamental principle involving human rights relating to a parent-child relationship. I'm going to cover issues 1, 2, and 4 in our brief, and I hope I can be of good time for leaving issue 3 for my co-counsel a couple of minutes to discuss. Your Honor, the facts in this matter are really not in dispute and really are not complicated or complex. And taking us back to 1981, when juvenile court action was adjudicated, and William Vaughn entered a courtroom, an open court, admitted, acknowledged, and accepted Angel as his daughter, as his natural daughter. And that admission, acknowledgement, and acceptance was heard by the juvenile judge, journalizing the journal entry. At that time, not only did Angel have a father, supposedly, but she had a father, in fact, in law, which is recognized. And that fact was never in dispute at any time after Angel's birth to Mr. Vaughn's untimely death a few months after this court action. And in fact, when the estate of William Vaughn was presented for probate, it was recognized by the administrators that Angel was William's father. In other words, we don't have an issue as to whether we have the proof, whether there's a spurious claim, whether there's an uncertainty. We have a known and adjudicated fact that Angel was and still is the natural daughter of William Vaughn.
Counsel, has the statutory and case law changed between 1982 to the present time, and if so, what applies?
The statute involving legitimization has changed. The statute involving parent-child or parentage actions have changed. The case law, I'd like to say, hasn't changed as it affects this case. Because we go back to 1982. For 1981, Mr. Vaughn made this acknowledgement. The case law in Lally and in Trimble says that if you have an adjudication, if you have a court of competent jurisdiction adjudicating a parent-child relationship, then that's all we need for purposes of inheritance. That illegitimacy really is not an issue. That existed back then. It never got a chance to be discussed in the probate court during the estate proceedings. The simple reason: nobody bothered to tell Angel that the probate court was attempting to remove her as a next of kin.
One of her mother's representatives filed a document with the probate court saying, Angel's illegitimate, please close the guardianship because she is not going to inherit anything. And there was a motion filed by Bradshaw's lawyer saying that we want to remove Angel from the list of heirs. I would guess, based upon the fact that Angel's mother and guardian, who was bonded, I assume, made this representation to the court. Was there any thought about Angel's mother's bonding company here? She represented to the court that whatever her advice, wherever she got her advice, my daughter doesn't have any right, essentially, to inherit from her father. Is that
well, let me distinguish the two matters that were before the probate court, the statement of Angel's mother, and the duty of the probate court, because regardless of whatever happened in the guardianship proceedings and whether Angel's mother, Debbie, was correct or incorrect in her factual, Angel wasn't. I may mention the fact she's not an illegitimate child, she's a child of illegitimate parents. But the fact that Angel's
born That's a good distinction to make, by the way.
The problem is that Angel's mother made a conclusion that she had no basis to make, first of all. Second of all, that was in a totally different manner, not in the estate. We have an estate that's set up that says that Angel's the next of kin. There is an application to remove Angel as the next of kin. There is an, if we have a legislation situation, we have a parentage action, we have a guardian ad litem to make sure that the interest of the child is protected. Here what happened was, is that a statement was made to a referee at the time, a probate referee, saying, we got a child here who is illegitimate, never recognized, and is not the next of kin.
Your argument is that the mother's representation to the probate court that this is an illegitimate child, a child born of illegitimate parents, that's a discrete decision that's made by her in the probate court to close the guardianship, but it does not have anything to do with whether she's a next of kin, legally whether she's a next of kin and can inherit.
That's sure, absolutely. There should have been, if there's any doubt, a complaint of determination. Again, we are not dealing with the uncertainties of this child and this father. We are dealing with the absolute certainties of a child having been accepted by her father and a court having recognized this child as the father.
We're talking, counsel, Mr. Potash, are we sort of blurring over the distinctions, that legal distinctions, which that's what we have to deal in. You know, the father stood up and said whatever, but let's go to the legal distinctions. And it seems the argument that there's his admission in juvenile court makes him the reputed. Is it the reputed father versus the natural father? In probate court, one gets the status of natural parent, but not in juvenile court.
That's the distinction that has been mentioned, and that's what I was going to...
Could you address... Oh, on your other counsel, okay.
I'm going to try to do that. I mean, I have to answer that, but I don't want to step on our toes. But in a broader sense, though, that's not this case. We're not dealing with fine lines reputed and natural. We're dealing with recognized acceptance of a child by her father.
We need legal. When you say we're not dealing with fine distinctions, I mean, aren't we?
Well,
isn't that our job?
I'm sorry. She'll do a better job.
Okay.
The problem here is that what difference does it make for purposes of intestacy? What distinction does it make if we have a person stand up before a judge? We're not talking about somebody going to a muni court and saying, somebody going to a notary public.
It would be different in muni court?
Well, I would think it would be different only because these were appropriate proceedings where the issue was brought to the court's attention and that judge had appropriate jurisdiction to hear the case.
To decide, I guess, was it limited to support? I mean, I don't know. It seems like it was a difference.
The difference is the father, aside from the cases that have been decided, like the Inouye Martin, which the lower court relied upon heavily, was a disputed attorney case. White versus Randolph, which this court determined, was a disputed or was never an adjudicated attorney case. I'm saying that if we're going to be very narrow and make a decision, he not only admitted it, but it was journalized. So there is no question, because this court has always been concerned about the regularity of proceedings, making sure that there's certainty and finality, that somebody doesn't come out of the woodwork 50 years later saying, I'm the lost child, I'm leaving the advanced age.
Absolutely. Following up on Justice Cook's question, for purposes of intestacy,
that's right, this decision,
I still are controlled by the statute as
with the marriage,
but it was a gentleman's
senior.
Correct. And as I recall, there was a lot of language that should have been cleaned out of the statute long ago. What was required in terms of a child to inherit? What words, magic words, did you hear? Were the natural child, but you had not been recognized as such.
You're talking about legitimization?
Yeah, I think the word magic child was worked around.
In the juvenile court, the juvenile court judge from the journal entry filed the father to be the natural father of the child.
But in terms of intestacy, what put you in or out?
This is what's interesting. You got to what legal talks about children, without the definition of children. We don't have that. We have a statute that talks about legitimization of children for purposes of inheritance. Then it has to become a law decision that talks about things that happen. You know, when this court makes a decision, you take a look at what you're doing.
But in 1982, what legal terminology put you in to
This is statute. This is that's going to be important. Can't be well.
When terminology under equal protection of the law, this child is recognized by competent, by court of competent jurisdiction as having a parent-child relationship. So under Trimble and Lally, at this man's death, notwithstanding how 21 goes, 21
goes, 7 children, right? Stepchildren would definitely out.
They take less.
All right.
The spouse, and then goes up and then over and down, and actually goes down and then up and over. But stepchildren are the last people to stay alive.
I don't know that I'm getting an answer.
I'm sorry, I misunderstand the question. And with all due respect, Your Honor, I do want to keep talking about this for my co-counsel. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Potash. Ms. Potash.
Is the court, my name is Arlene Potash, and I'm one of the counsels for Attorney Angel Warner. And if I may try to answer your question, Your Honor, the language, the only small piece difference in this case is that the statute said probate, and this occurred in juvenile court. And what we're putting forth today is that all the criteria to legitimize William's daughter was met.
So, and in 1982, the requirement was that you be a natural child. Is that where the magic words?
Well, it says that the father, in his life, during his lifetime, to acknowledge his child in a probate court. We're saying that all...
We'll come to the distinction between the courts, but okay. What's required under the statute to send a district
court? Well, I mean, you know, either the marriage, adoption, or acknowledgement that this is my child.
Any of those get you into, fit you into the definition of child under statutes and distribution at the time?
I believe his acknowledgement in open court under oath saying that...
I'm not asking you. In probate court, what is a child in 1982?
I don't have the definition of a child.
Then I'll jump to your view of this is the only talking point the other side has is that the determination that she was the natural child of the deceased,
which was
what was made in the wrong court.
Exactly. I guess so.
Made in juvenile court rather than...
Right, and the language of court order in the juvenile court was that she adjudicated William to be the natural father.
But the appellee argues, but that's for purposes of custody, visitation.
Okay. And all these the cases that they bring forward, White and Henry Martin, all, and we're talking about reputed fathers, which is often the language used in juvenile courts. When you have a finding of a reputed father, in those cases, White and Lally, when you have the fatherless denying paternity. So you can deny paternity and still be found with a reputed father. And the distinction in our case is we had William went into court and said, I am the father. He acknowledged under oath, this is my daughter. That's what distinguishes this case from those. That's why you could have someone be a reputed father in juvenile court, but not, you know, for purposes of inheritance. And we're saying all the criteria, all the safeguards that the statute then existing was trying to say protect, and what is it that the statute, what was the policy behind the statute to prevent spurious claims of paternity after one's death, to allow for the orderly disposition of estates. In this case, on either side, no one disputes who the father was.
Let me ask you, if Angel's father had applied for, let's say, Social Security benefits for an injury that he received, and he was asked to list his family, and he listed Angel as his daughter. Could that be used in probate court to indicate that she's an heir?
I'm not familiar. I believe so.
And what is it about the juvenile court proceeding? You said it meets all the...
Well, I mean, what took place on that date, the certainty, the solemnity, the meetings, I mean, all those elements were present. In fact, just a mere 3 months later, the statute changed and said what took place on that date in juvenile court is good for all purposes. So, you know, we're not before the court today.
Sure. That's your only problem. 2105-18 at the time that this happened required to be done in the probate court. That's all.
And
you say this is at least substantially equivalent to that and just as good. That's
and
your argument.
Equal protection, there's no...
Is there any question in illegitimate that a child of illegitimate parents does inherit? Is there any question that a child of illegitimate parents does inherit from its parents?
Is there any question?
Yes. Is that a second question here?
I'm sorry, I don't follow. I mean, the United States Supreme Court decision in Raleigh says illegitimate children can inherit.
I say, so that isn't a question here.
That's not a question.
In other words, if in fact it were done in the proper court, she's entitled to inherit.
Yes.
Or if we find that the juvenile court proceeding was the equivalent of a probate court proceeding, she's entitled to inherit.
That's correct.
Okay. That's really the two issues.
And we're asking this court to recognize that what he did in that juvenile court was equivalent to.
There you go.
That all of the criteria was met. There was no uncertainty as to paternity in this case, but for his untimely death. So we're asking this court to find that he did legitimize his daughter and to restore to Angel her legitimacy that her father gave her. And I'd like to reserve the rest of the time for rebuttal.
You've used your time, so you'll get 30 seconds. Mr. Evans.
May it please the court, distinguished colleagues, my name is Neil Evans and I represent the Sureties Safeco Insurance Company of America. I also represent Jackie Bradshaw, the administrators.
Is there a conflict there?
There isn't at this point.
When I look at it, it seems to me that just for purposes of argument, let's assume that we say they're right. Safeco still might not be responsible because of the statute that says that the proceedings are, it's an error of the court. So therefore, it was not negligence or that sort of thing, and the fiduciary didn't do anything wrong, so therefore the bond doesn't cover.
I'm right? Here to represent Jack Bradshaw in your capacity as the fiduciary.
Okay.
I'm not here to represent her as heir.
Okay. Well, that wasn't made clear by the brief, and that's why I'm asking you the question, because if in fact Safeco isn't responsible, she might be.
That is a possibility.
Okay.
Sure. However, this case is a case where the administrators filed a motion in the probate court asking the court to correct the list of heirs. The dog is correct. Paternity is not an issue in this case. It was disclosed fully that Angel Vaughn was the daughter of William Vaughn. Administrator said that under the Mike v. Schwendel, Board of Mrs. Magoo, in another case, the child was not an heir, it was not an heir, and they asked the court to make that rule.
Counsel, we require the state to give country credit to the decisions of the district courts. Why wouldn't we have the probate court give appropriate credit to the decision of the juvenile court? Well, the advocated judgment entered, no dispute between the parties. Why wouldn't we have the probate court give appropriate credit to the juvenile
court? It's all determined in the juvenile court.
And what
paternity was admitted in the probate court.
What is paternity? What
does paternity does not equal heirship. That is a fundamental misconception.
So you can say, I am the father for what court?
I can say, my father can say to me, that's my son, which is true, and I am not his heir. I'm not his heir until my parent denotes me his heir in his will, or leaves his property under the law in an intestacy situation which makes me his heir. I can point to
let's take that one. If this gentleman died with a will and says, I leave everything I own, what little or great it is, to my children, share and share alike. Period.
So we've had an interpretation question as to what he meant by that.
This young woman,
attorney, that would have included Angel Bond, and would have had the will designated.
Absolutely.
What's that?
He could have had the will designated.
I'm saying he dies, and he writes the will before he goes into the juvenile court and does that. What he did here, and then he dies, same day he died, now, but he had this will. Not naming it, but I could say I would leave it to all of my children, those born now and those.
The question is, you have to assume he's a reasonably intelligent man and knowing the law and all this. But if he had been returning to the juvenile court, does he still reserve the right, after that admission, to change his will and exclude? Does he reserve the right to do a number of things?
Well, sure, he could change his will, but I'm saying if he didn't change his will, wouldn't she?
What was his intent at the time he made the admission in juvenile court? Did he do it out of embarrassment? Did he do it out of alleviating this woman's grief? Did he do it for any number of reasons? Nothing to do with inheritance. Under the law, as it existed at the time he died, Dwight versus Randolph, this court held, you have to comply with 25018 in order to designate the child as your heir. If you show up in probate court and say, I want this girl to be my heir, and I acknowledge that she's the final father, and the mother shows up and says, oh, no, you don't. No, you don't. She's not going to be your heir, and I'm not going to let you make her your heir. It's not in the best interest of the child. And the probate court agrees with that. The father's acknowledgement in probate court under the statute is annulled. Probate court controls the heirship, but there's a dispute as to whether this child should be made an heir. There has to be a clear line drawn between paternity and heirship. And in the Lally case, there the father did it, and recognized the son.
Well, I don't understand why. Someone's your child, they're your child. Why is there a difference between paternity and heirship? I'm not following you.
Because I have the right as a parent to control the disposition of my assets and the property rights.
And you can do that by will.
I can do it by will, or I can do it if I'm not making a will by relying on existing law, which is long time set in Ohio.
Would this man have any way of knowing that standing up in court saying, this is my child, wouldn't be good for probate court?
Yes,
going to a lawyer and studying the law?
Yes, he did. He had the decision of Henry Martin where there had been a finding of jury verdict in juvenile court.
And the average man is supposed to know that.
I can't put myself in the position of an average man as soon as you begin to approach the law. Those temples and that defense just don't reach each other.
So
I'm sorry. So you have to assume that this man is knowledgeable of the law.
Somebody who stands up and says, I'm this child's father, is to be presumed to believe that I'm only this child's father for paying child support, but not for inheritance.
In the facts of this case, he denied paternity, he pled not guilty first. He then comes in 6 months later, pleads guilty, and then the Upper East report comes in, giving him the bill for the child bringing expenses and child support. He objects. The objections are ruled, they're about ready to put a judgment on, and he's killed, no judgment is ever entered. So this man's flip-flops on the issue, as a matter of fact.
Isn't your strongest argument, trying to get to the issue here, isn't your strongest argument that the General Assembly has decided back then, at least in 82, that heirship is determined in probate court by whatever standards apply to the termination of heirship, and that's a separate forum, a separate issue than determining whether someone is a father for purposes of custody and support and all those matters. Isn't that simply the statute that we've, and that this court has said, essentially supported that view? Is that your position?
That is a strong argument. I agree with your on that. Blake versus Randolph was very clear. Blake versus Randolph had the In re Martin decision before it in the briefs, and it resolved the conflict that existed between the 10th and the 8th districts on this issue, and they upheld the 10th district rulings, which say, yes, legislature has a say.
Let's assume that the case. What then? We have the race judicata issue, I guess. The question of the notice that was provided to Angela's guardian, I guess it would have been at that time.
I believe there's a preliminary issue before you get to race judicata, and that is, do they have the right to open up these judgments at all? Is there any the fraud? And it's clear there was no fraud on this record. The guardian used the same statement of fact as did the administrators in presenting the issue to the court. They said, we have an illegitimate child who did not inherit from her father. That was stated on the record. Please make a decision. There's no fraud in that statement.
But that's a wrong decision.
The decision that the probate court may have been wrong.
Do you have your brief?
I do.
Would you go to page 28, please? Yes, sir, the last full paragraph, the second sentence. All of the evidence points to the fact the parties in the probate court were in agreement that Angel N. Vaughn was illegitimate and could not inherit from her father. Now, you don't mean that as a freestanding proposition of law, do you? Because all right, but you can only argue that so that you argue that Safeco is not responsible. That sounded to me, when I finally got that far and looked at it, that you were saying that because the parties in the probate court were in agreement that Vaughn was illegitimate, could not inherit from her father, that makes it so. It makes it so for the proceedings to protect your client, your primary client, but it isn't the fact, is it, in the law? An illegitimate child can inherit from its parent.
Can inherit from her father only in 1982 if the father has taken from her.
I understand that.
Illegitimizes, that is
correct. I just the first proposition. An illegitimate child can inherit from its parent. Is that correct?
In 1982 could inherit by and through its mother, could not inherit by or through its father unless the father took certain steps.
Okay, fine. If you take the certain steps in 1982, you gotta take those steps now too. They still have to legitimatize the child before they can inherit. But you agree that forgetting the court procedures, that illegitimate children have a right to inherit through their parents. I mean, that's been the law for a long, long time.
You have a potentiality to inherit.
Okay. I give up.
Parent controls the right of heirship. It is not worth it. I do want to close the fraud issue, and I find no fraud that took place in the probate court. Therefore, the judgment of the probate court cannot be set aside. It's a final judgment. And under the statute, it can't be contested after 3 years. Both the administrator and the fiduciary under the statute are immunized from any liability pertaining to the administration of the state.
Let's go back to the other issue again. You're telling me that if a mother, natural mother, and natural father, both accept the fact that the child is that of the father, that he acknowledges it in his everyday life, maybe even pays support, but never goes to the probate court or now the juvenile court and takes the formal steps of legitimization that child can't inherit?
That is correct. That is a valid decision, Justice Brennan. I would agree with you that that's an unjust result. In his dissent, he's made that very argument.
Yeah, but I...
The party in the allowing court rejected that argument. For the allowing case, you have a man who recognized his child, raised him, reared him, acknowledged him in the deal, son in his marriage certificate, and he has not legitimized him in the probate court proceedings or whatever the court was. The statute says that had to be done. The appellate court said he's not an heir. Once the United States Supreme Court made a form of that decision, that was a decision that was considered by this court, and right to Mr. Randolph, that is the law as it exists, I believe, to this day.
Are you saying that Angel was represented at the hearing to disinherit Angel on March 15th of 82?
No, the representatives did not appear on that occasion. They did not oppose the motion. They were given service of the motion. certified by Mr. Forget his name, the attorney. He certified that they had gotten notice of the motion. They never appeared and never opposed it. And she had the opportunity to appear and oppose it, but did not so appear to her garden.
There was an affidavit that was filed supplement to the briefs that had an affidavit in this state that she did not get notice.
The guardian, the mother, stated she had not received notice. The service was made upon her attorney, Eric Hoffman, in accordance with the rules.
Is that the attorney not in the same office and shared space, same telephone as the attorney for the administrators?
Eric Hoffman shared offices with Potash.
That's correct.
That is correct. But he had just moved. And the new notice went to his new address. He had, until that time, shared offices with the Potashes, yes.
Does it make any difference that Angel's guardianship was terminated prior to the disinheritance? Therefore, she had no representative? In other words, on March the 8th of 1882, the guardianship was terminated. March the 15th, when the court stated, well, we have everybody here and represented.
I think you can read that either two ways. You can either read it as saying heirship was determined at the guardianship moment, and since you can't be an heir, you can't inherit, therefore there's no need for guardian.
Should that not alert the court that there may be some fraud here where the mother, there might have been some side deal or something, at least something for the court to have a hearing? Because I can't see where there's been any hearings, or at least the magistrate's decision in the recent case, there was not even a transcript filed.
No, no transcript
or anything. Didn't the lower court, in the present court now, have a duty at least to have looked into these matters, to have had a full-blown hearing, had heard from Angel, had heard from the mother, had affidavits or whatever, instead of just going on motions and just stating that this is the law? Didn't even look into the fraud, as far as I can tell.
The issue of fraud did not appear in the proceeding, except insofar as the alleged failure to come out of court determination.
The issue of fraud would only come up at the hearing, and there was no actual hearing that I can see that was held.
I'm talking about
the present lower court.
There was a hearing. I attended it. It was before the magistrate and settled in chambers. Counsel were present. The parties were present.
In chambers?
Yes. It wasn't in open court, but it was settled in chambers. I was there. Mr. Potash was not there. He sent a representative, and the parties were present. In fact, the magistrate called the parties in.
Is that a proper proceeding?
I don't know if there's any rule that requires that the magistrate's hearing be held in open court if the parties otherwise agree. I think it was a proper proceeding. Yes, I do. If I may continue,
your red light, since you can sum up quickly.
Yeah. I was saying that there was no error in the proceedings in 1982. The court followed the proceedings of this court by Mr. Randolph. The present court will adhere to that law as applied in 1982. Angel Wong was not an heir, although she was the child of Angel Wong. The court nation did not inherit. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The decision below be affirmed.
Thank you. Potash, you use your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. Well, it's easier sitting here than watching somebody else answer questions. The answers you should have given, Mr. Justice Moyer, Piper. In 1982, as it is today, a child is a child of my common law, meaning that, for since the medieval times, you had to be the product of marriage. If you weren't the product of marriage, you were nullius filius, meaning it didn't exist. We're asking this court to sort of change decades and centuries of the whole misunderstanding as to the punishment the child is supposed to parent. I don't know the answer to the question, but that's how it's under 21506. First of all, we never got the fraud in the probate court. We never got the fraud. We were thrown out in race judicata. So the issue of fraud, affirming a fraud, if there wasn't fraud, never made it on the merits. So we asked for the opportunity to show that there may have been a fraudulent act in concealing the fact that the father acknowledged and legitimized his child. Paternity is heirship. That's what we are asking this court to do. A child is born with two parents.
Well, I thought you're saying that the court the probate court did not know that he had, the father had acknowledged that this was his child?
Correct. Take a look at the supplemental brief, page 9. The motion that was filed, first of all, was not certified mail. It was regular mail to Eric Hoffman, who was not an attorney in the case.
Well, I thought that the mother, his guardian, had filed a motion in probate court saying the child is illegitimate and close the guardianship.
Illegitimate. But in 1982, an illegitimate child still could inherit.
Well, but the point is, the probate court knew that the father had said, this is my child, didn't it?
I don't know what the probate court knew. That's the problem. If you take a look at the motion, all it said is Angel Vaughn is illegitimate and William Vaughn has no recognized children who could inherit. That is a mistake. It's a hatchet. Angel Vaughn may, for purposes of terminology, was illegitimate, but she could inherit. And I submit that the probate court, under this fact, again, the probate court was asked to remove Angel's birthright. She didn't even get a chance to sell it for all rentals. They were telling her, you are no longer the doctor, the daughter. She had a right to know about this, to be heard about this, and to object to this. And none of that was given her. Now, whether the probate court knew the details of the juvenile court proceeding, I can't say. I wasn't there. And there is a third potash mentioned here, my brother Steve. I was not there. There are a bunch of us there. But I was not there. This is many years ago.
Doesn't the father have a right to make her an heir?
He has a right, but you know, Your Honor, this is like a catch-22. You have a right to make an heir if you know about it. But then if you know about it, you might as well make a will and put her in there. The problem is that many people die without.
He didn't do that, did he?
He did not make a will, and he did legitimize her. The question is it a recognizable legitimization?
He didn't make her an heir.
Well, this is why we're here. We're saying he did.
What you're saying is merely because he acknowledges the paternity of this daughter, that makes her an heir. That's what you want us to say.
I want you to say exactly that.
But that isn't what the law is today.
I believe that is the law today, and that was the law in 1982. If you take a look at the Supreme Court decisions, your decisions in White, in the very beginning, the first paragraph says, you incorporated the Court of Appeals decision, Justice Holmes, but you said, based on the facts of that case, we will do what we will do. The facts of that case are not the facts of this case, because there was no acknowledgement, no recognition, no adjudication, no nothing. That's not the facts of White. Trimble and Lally are the facts of this case. Illinois said you have to marry the mother and file for an acknowledgement. The Supreme Court says, wait a minute, that's ridiculous. And it goes on and talks about why it is that you shouldn't punish children.
Yeah, your time is up. You've answered the question.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal, please adjourn court.